Welcome to Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English, a tour, a colorful educational tour of our capital, Madrid, and of our province, La Comunidad de Madrid. Learn English with me, with Richard Vaughn, using Madrid as our base of operations. Yeah, let's go. Hello, everyone. Good morning. How are you today? Welcome to a new edition. Sunday. Today is Sunday, the seventh day of the week. Yes, the day in which God decided to rest. It took God 6 days. Tardó. Dios tardó 6 días. No siete. It took God 6 days to create the earth. And he rested on the seventh. And today is the seventh day. It's the day of worship for many people, Christians. The day of worship is rendición de culto. Rendir culto is to worship. But for me, no, I have to work. It's Sunday and I'm speaking English. I'm teaching English indirectly on this program. So welcome to Madrid en Inglés. Madrid in English. My name is Richard Vaughn. I'm an English teacher, an entrepreneur, a businessman, and a manager, and a musician. I have 3 hours of classical music, classical style music, registered in the SGAE, Sociedad General de Autores. So I'm a musician. I'm also a writer. I have published many, many books for learning English. And I have published three essays, not directly. Well, one is indirectly related to learning English and the other two are not. One's a philosophy book, basically. And the other is my autobiography, which is coming out right now. It's available right now. So if you're interested, Autobiografía de Texas a España, you can find it, I think, anywhere. On Amazon, in Corte Inglés, in the Casa del Libro, and if not, anywhere, I think you can find it. So if you're curious about my life, escrito en español, I wrote it in Spanish. And so I write Spanish as well or maybe better than English. I enjoy writing in Spanish. It took me only 6 weeks, or 5 weeks, really, to write that book. 244 pages? I can't remember. But nevertheless, welcome to Madrid en Inglés, and let's get going. I'm talking about my life as it corresponds or as it pertains to the city of Madrid and to the autonomous community of Madrid and to Spain in general. So let's get going. Where was I when I finished last week? Last week I was 23 years old. Long time ago, eh? Last week on Sunday I was 24. I was 24 years old. And it was January, February, and March 1976. Francisco Franco had died the previous November. The government of Carlos Arias Navarro was busy, not really starting the transition. Because Carlos Arias Navarro was not a strong defender or promoter of what we now call the transition to democracy. I think Juan Carlos I and Torquato Fernández Miranda and a few others thought that it was wise to continue with the prime minister from the Franco period, because Carlos Arias Navarro had been the prime minister after the assassination of Luis Carrero Blanco in December 1973. So when Franco died on November 20th, I believe, 1975, 2 years later, basically, Carlos Arias Navarro had 2 years of experience as the prime minister of Spain, the president of the government. And I believe that the decision makers thought that it was not a good idea to make an abrupt change. Because, first, simply the change of the death of Franco and the ascension of Juan Carlos to the throne as the king of Spain, that was a big enough change. So they decided to maintain Carlos Arias Navarro as the prime minister up until July of 1976. So things were happening. 1976, messy year. Messy means desordenado. People were optimistic because it was the first time in 36 years that they had a possibility for a democracy. And some people had the idea of a republic. But people were optimistic. But it's interesting. People were more optimistic in 1976 than today. In 2024, despite the fact, a pesar de que, en inglés se dice a pesar del hecho de que, despite the fact that ETA and Grapo were killing people right and left, I don't know how many, I can ask, let me ask ChatGPT just a second, we can find out, ChatGPT, yes, how many, I'm going to say, yeah, well, how many people were killed in Spain by ETA in 1976. Probably about 50, something like that, but I'm not sure. Yes, there were deaths of 29 people, less than I thought. And Grapo, and by the Grapo, see if they have any numbers here. The Grapo killed 16 people. Okay, so between the Grapo and ETA, there were 45 people were killed in 1976. Now, what was the annual inflation rate in Spain in 1976? I believe it was 26%. I hear it says 19.5, but I don't agree. I don't agree. ChatGPT, the artificial intelligence, you cannot trust it completely. Yes. For example, if I go into Google and I ask the same question, ¿cuál fue la tasa de inflación en 1966 en España? Let me see if I can get an answer. 19.8, so it's less than I thought. But nevertheless, compared to today, the terrorist activities, 45 people were killed that year. Other terrorist activities happened, like the Los Abogados Laboralistas de Atocha. They were killed. It was a mess. There was a lot of problems in the transition in the questions of law and order. The inflation was high. Today it's not compared to then. Nobody is killed now by terrorism. And also there was a lot of labor conflict. The unions, UGT, UGT and Comisiones, UGT and Workers' Commissions, and USO, Unión Sindical Obrera, they became active. What was called the Sindicatos Verticales of Franco began to be dismantled. All of the money that was collected through the payments of workers to the Sindicatos Verticales were given to UGT and Comisiones. No al USO, no. As far as I know. And so that was an enormous amount of money was passed to the socialist and communist trade unions, because in 1976, both UGT was very closely affiliated with the Socialist Party, el PSOE, with Felipe González and Alfonso Guerra and others. And Comisiones Obreras of Marcelino Camacho and company, they were very closely intimately affiliated with Santiago Carrillo and the Communist Party. And immediately, in 1976, many of the factories in Spain began to suffer labor conflict, strikes, people demanding higher wages, which was natural because if you have a 20% inflation, it's people need, you know, the companies need to readjust salaries and wages. In English, wage, it's just different. People in Spain collect per month. Su sueldo mensual. You talk about month. Now, traditionally in the United States, white-collar workers were paid monthly, and blue-collar workers were paid weekly or biweekly, every week or every 2 weeks. Now, workers, we say wage. El salario de un operario obrero, we say wage. Es que wage, wage. Salary is white-collar worker. We say de cuello blanco. So oficinistas y más arriba. Pero de mono azul, we say blue-collar. Cuello azul, cuello blanco. Blue-collar workers and white-collar workers were paid wages. For example, when I was a teenager in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I worked in 5 different jobs between the age of 16 and 18. Two jobs in 2 different supermarkets, and then in a pizzeria, and finally in a radiator packaging warehouse, Baquetado de Radiadores, embalado. And so, embalaje? Embalaje, right? Okay. And so I received a wage weekly. Every week I was paid. So we say wage. So the wages in Spain needed to be raised because the inflation was very high. But there was a lot of labor conflict. I remember in Getafe, several companies along the Toledo Highway, driving from Madrid to Toledo, at that time, this is 1976, the Toledo Highway, Carretera de Toledo, Autovía hoy en día, was a 2-lane, one lane in one direction and one lane in the other, from the Plaza Elíptica, Fernández Ladreda, hoy se dice hoy en día, from the Plaza Elíptica to Toledo, the capital. It was 2-lane all the way. Now, once you left Madrid and were driving towards Getafe and Leganés, well, you encountered Standard Electrica, a very large factory on the left. You encountered Aristrain, a very big foundry, Fundición de Acero, also on the left. And then a series of companies, and on the right you had El Bercial, an unincorporated, una pedanía de Leganés, really. I mean, it was illegal, but they were building things. But on the left, there were several companies, 2 of which closed in 1976 or 1977 because of the intense labor conflict and problems. I don't remember the name of one of them, but another one was very big with 2,500 workers. And that was Kelvinator, an important company for White Line, Línea Blanca. You know, refrigerators, freezers, stoves, etc. Washing machines, dryers. And they closed. 2,500 people lost their job. And then you had John Deere. And then you had El Pueblo de la Ciudad de Getafe on one side. On the other side, you had Leganés, of course, and Sarce Quemada. Well, Sarce Quemada was practically nothing yet. But you had the Polígono de Getafe and the Polígono de Leganés, etc. And then you continued. And then, of course, you reached Parla. And then you continued to Illescas and to Toledo. But in any case, in those first 6 months of 1976, with Etta and Grappo very busy, inflation very high, labor conflict very high, I was very busy teaching English in Villa Verde Alto. No, Villa Verde Bajo. I was also teaching in Atayo in Plaza de Castilla. And I was teaching and spending a lot of hours in Plaza de Cusco, with Ford Motor Company, because I was teaching some members of the management staff, and I was doing translations for Ford, for the accounting department, for the spare parts department, for the service department, for the dealer expansion department, and for the public relations department, Departamento de Comunicación. I remember we had to translate a complete book about the Canary Islands, because one of the top executives from Detroit, from Michigan, was planning to visit Spain and to visit the Canary Islands. And Ford Motor Company gave us a long brochure, maybe 60 pages, about Tenerife, Las Palmas, Fuerteventura, you know, everything. And we had to translate that baby. We had to translate that to English. And also the sales promotion, advertising. I learned a lot. I really learned a lot in translating from Spanish, from English to Spanish, basically. Most of the translations I did, personally, were from English to Spanish, and I had to learn very quickly how to express myself on paper. I asked many, many questions for people. I remember one girl I met, and I asked her, said, how do you say, and she said, desperfectos, los desperfectos. And so I learned the word desperfectos. I learned the word cigüeñal for the crankshaft. I learned the word árbol de levas for the camshaft. Taques for the push rods and the valves in the colector de entrada, colector de salida for the intake and exhaust manifolds. Wow. I learned all these things. You see, la rejilla, and la varilla nivel de aceite. I mean, I learned all of this stuff for Ford Motor Company and also the dealer networks and the accounting system. It was an interesting year, 1976. I think it was the 4th of July, Independence Day for the United States, but I'm not sure. Yeah, what day, let me ask, what day of July 1976 was Adolfo Suárez named Prime Minister of Spain, or President of the Government, as you say? He was named Prime Minister on July 3rd, Año 43. King Juan Carlos I appointed him to lead the government, marking a critical step in Spain's transition to democracy, following the dictatorship of Francisco Franco. Suárez played a key role in dismantling the Francoist regime and establishing democratic institutions, culminating in the 1978 Spanish Constitution. It was an interesting period, a messy period in Spanish history, and I was a witness, first-hand witness. Testigo de primera mano. I was there. And I was experiencing the transition in every day, because I was working several hours every day in Intercom office on Calle Mayor, very near, 100 meters from the Puerta del Sol. And every week, at least one demonstration came down, walking down the Calle Mayor or Calle Arenal. And so we always had a lot of noise and commotion from the wind. You know, we were on the second floor, segunda planta, and with our windows to the Calle Mayor. And so we saw a lot of what do you say? Strikers and demonstrators, manifestantes, constantly. But I repeat, as I said last week, last Sunday, people were optimistic despite all of the problems. People were optimistic. It was a new period of Spanish history. I'll be right back after this short break. Don't go away.
Onda Madrid. Feliz Navidad.
Un taller de pan puede cambiarnos la vida. Vuelve Antonio Molero con Angie Fernández, Esther Ortega y Raúl Peña en una terapia integral de Cristina Clemente y Marc Angelet. Un divertido retrato de la sociedad actual y sus grupos de autoayuda. Una terapia integral en el Teatro Fígaro. Venta de entradas en gruposmedia.com.
Tras agotar todas las entradas, Sara Baras vuelve a Madrid en el Teatro EDP Gran Vía. No dejes pasar esta última oportunidad para ver Vuela, su homenaje a Paco de Lucía. Entradas en gruposmedia.com. Sorprende esta Navidad con un regalo muy especial.
Y recuerda, no todos los huevos son iguales. Huevos de maíz de Lucas.
Hello and welcome back. Okay. I was talking about 1976. July 3rd, 1976, Adolfo Suarez was named by King, was appointed Prime Minister of Spain. This is an interesting period in my life. This period, I would say from January 1976 to December 1976, that year, 1976, was probably the most formative period of my life. Why? Because this woman, Deborah Duarte, who was the owner of Intercom, she named me the head of teachers and the head of translations, two different, very different businesses, totally different. And I had to, and I was only 24, so I had to wise up. Wise up is one way in English, espabilarme. Wise is sabio. Ahora, to wise up is ponerse uno sabio. Bueno, espabilarse. And so I had to, very, very quickly. And I was working probably 12 hours a day. I was exhausted. But at the same time, I was having lunch with Deborah Duarte. I was learning a lot because I was 24. However, most of the people I was dealing with were 40, 44, 50, 38. So I was normally dealing with people who were considerably older and more experienced than me, supposedly. So I had to learn very quickly to work at the level of people who had 10 and 20 years of experience. And the only experience I had was from age 16, because I worked during high school for 2 years. I worked in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but then I didn't work during the university years. So really, how much experience did I have? I had 4 years of experience working in the real world, first as a teenager and later as a young adult in Madrid. And I had to deal with people who were older than I was, including many teachers. Many of the teachers were older than me. And I had to exercise a certain degree of leadership and know-how and to set the right example. So it was a process of maturity that was quite quick. In addition, I was teaching maybe 20 hours a week or 25 hours a week. I was teaching a lot. And the students I had were on the average 15 years older than me. I was 24, and the average age of my students was probably 30, 39 or 40. However, I had already worked for 1 year in Guadalajara, in La Central Nuclear de Zorita, in which case I was younger. I was 23, 22 and 23, and I was teaching people who were also 35, 40, 45, So I already had experience dealing with people who were older than I was. And so it was not difficult for me, but it was a lot of work, especially working with Ford Motor Company for the launching, lanzamiento de Ford Fiesta. Febrero del 77 fue el lanzamiento formal, oficial. That was the official launching date, February 1977. So 1976 was a big year in Spain for Ford Motor Company. They were building the factory in Almusafes in the province of Valencia, and they had the headquarters in Madrid, in Plaza de Cusco, bueno, in Sor Ángel la Cruz, between the Castellana and Capitanaya, which today is Puente Juan Maragall. And so I was very busy, extremely busy. And I was exhausted. I remember one student who was human resources for Zardoya Otis, and he was a psychologist, an industrial psychologist. And he said, I said, when I go home, I fall asleep immediately. And he said, well, you fall asleep because you're exhausted. You don't fall asleep because you're sleepy. You're just tired. And I think he was right. But I was young. I was strong, very strong. I had energy. And I enjoyed it. So despite the stress, despite the hard work, despite classes and translations and everything, I was having a good time. And I remember one anecdote that I always tell. And I don't remember exactly when it was, but I'm going to find out. Just a second. I'm going to find out. I'm going to put the name of a person here and look at her filmography. Okay. Now, in 1976, I usually had lunch near the office. And the office was located on Calle Mayor, número 6 or something. It was the beginning of Calle Mayor. And I usually had lunch with a person from the office, sometimes with the big boss, Deborah Duarte, and sometimes with others. I don't remember who I was with, but we went to a restaurant in one of the exits from the Plaza Mayor. And that restaurant is still there. It's called Los Galayos. Los Galayos. And it's still there. It's a very good restaurant, by the way. And this was in 1976. And the restaurant was full downstairs, so they took us to the second floor, to upstairs, to the first floor. And there were only one table occupied. And that was a long table in the center of the room. And we were given a table, me and my companion were given a table in the corner. But I was looking over at that table because there were about 12 young women, jóvenes mujeres, about 12 young women sitting at that table. All of them were dressed as in police uniforms, mujeres policías. But all of them were attractive, very, very attractive. And I said to the person I was with, look at those police women. They are really good looking. My God. Qué guapas son todas. Me voy a hacer policía. For about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I couldn't stop looking at these. And there was one of the police women who was sitting at the head of the table. She was especially good looking. He said, wow, mira la que están, how do you say, al fondo de la mesa. She's incredible. Finally, I asked the waiter, I said, ¿vienen aquí las policías a menudo? I said, do these police women come here often? He said, no son policías, they son actrices. These are actresses. They're filming a movie nearby called Señoritas de Uniforme. And I said, ¿Y la del esa? No, that's Mari José Cantudo. So I was having lunch in Los Gallayos in a room in the second floor dining area. And there were only two tables occupied, one with me and my friend or work colleague, and the other with Mari José Cantudo and about 11 other beautiful actresses, all dressed as police women. So that was an interesting, that was my introduction to Mari José Cantudo. And it was called Señorita de Uniforme. The director is Luis María Delgado. 1976. That was an interesting year. It was 1976. It was an interesting year. And as I said, in July, Juan Carlos I appointed Adolfo Suárez. And everybody was surprised because nobody knew who he was. But I remember the women saying, ¡Qué guapo es el nuevo presidente! And so it immediately, people had a good impression. Why? Because Carlos Arias Navarro was not guapo. Okay, he was, at that time, he was probably 65 years old. Arias Navarro, or 70, I don't know. Let's see, Carlos Arias Navarro, let's see. He was born in 1908. In 1908, which means in 1976. Wow, let's see, 18, 28, 38, 48, 58, 68, 78. So he was. Let's see, he was 68 years old, or 67, when he. Was dismissed by the king. He died later in, well, he died in 1989. So he was, let's say he retired from public life in July 1976, and he lived for another 13 years. All right. And Adolfo Suárez became the prime minister, and he set a date for December for a referendum. Okay, the referendum. Now, that was called the referendum for the political change. Yeah, el referendum. Para el cambio democrático. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was called in España. It was in December 1976. Proyecto de la Ley de Reforma. Let's see. Política. El referéndum sobre el proyecto de ley para la reforma política. December 15th. 1976. All right. But I repeat, 1976 was a messy year. Messy significa muy desordenado. A lot of people were being killed by terrorist groups. Inflation was very high. Labor conflict was very high. The Abogados Laboralistas, I think it was in 1976. Yes. Cuando mataron a los abogados de Atocha. Yeah, that's it, de Atocha. I think it was 1976. No, January 1977. So it was 1 month after the referendum. Okay. It was a very unstable period of time. And in 1977, Adolfo Suárez also legalized the Communist Party. And people in the right in Spain, especially the military, it was a very delicate moment. At least that was the feeling, that it was a very delicate moment. The government was moved because the presidency of the government, the offices were on the beginning of La Castellana, which is now in Ministerio del Interior. The Interior Ministry is located on the Castellana, on the same side as those Torres de Colón, about 200 meters further ahead. But that was the Presidente Gobierno at that time. And because of the threats that Adolfo Suarez was receiving because of certain decisions, perhaps necessary decisions during the transition, the decision was made to prepare the Palacio de la Moncloa for the presidents. And that's when Adolfo Suarez moved to the Moncloa. Yeah. Cuando se trasladó la oficina de la presidencia a la Moncloa. If I can find that. Plaza Moncloa. November 28th, 1976. Yes. No, in 1977, el presidente de los Juárez trasladó la sede de la presidencia del gobierno ubicada entonces en el Palacio de Villamejor a la Moncloa. So it was in 1977. All right. And then September came. In September 1976, I could consider the most important month in my life. Maybe, maybe not. But I'll be back after the break to talk more about that.
Onda Madrid te desea felices fiestas.
El Festival de las Estrellas presenta Eternamente Pablo.
Yo volveré.
Concierto homenaje a Pablo Milanés, el 12 de febrero en el Wizzing Center de Madrid, con la participación de Víctor Manuel, Estrella Morente, Andrés Suárez, José Mercé, Miguel Ríos, Sara Malikian y Pasión Vega, entre otros. Entradas a la venta en WeGo, el Corte Inglés y Wizzing Center. No te lo pierdas.
¿Necesitas guardar tus muebles en espera de nueva vivienda o reforma? Confía en Estebaranz. Llevamos los contenedores a tu casa para una mínima manipulación. Mudanzas y guardamuebles Estebaranz. Desde siempre a tu lado. Vive una experiencia gastronómica en el Asador Villaranda. Asados en horno de leña a la antigua usanza. Calidad y tradición se unen para evocar la auténtica cocina castellana. Asadorvillaranda.com.
Hello and welcome back. Okay, one more segment and then I'm finished for today. Sunday, yes. Madrid en inglés. Madrid in English. Yes. So, I was talking about the political situation and the referendum at the end of the year in December was overwhelmingly favorable. La ley para el referéndum para el proyecto de ley de reforma política. Okay, and so I think 97% of the people voted yes. I don't remember. Let's see. La referendum. All right. Let's see if I can find how many. Just a second. 97.4 of the Spanish people voted yes for political reform to move towards the transition, the democratic transition, and 2.6% voted no. Including Blas Piñar. I remember Blas Piñar speaking in a los procuradores de las Cortes. It's interesting, we didn't say diputados. Congreso de Diputados de los Procuradores de las Cortes. And he gave a very, he was very right wing, but he was very eloquent and a very good speaker. And I remember I heard on television part of his speech. Of course, I didn't agree with what he was saying, but he certainly was powerful and eloquent in his arguments. Okay. And he was wrong, because Spain has successfully transitioned to a democratic system, and the system has worked relatively well. Many people, of course, are upset about, well, Many people didn't like Felipe González. Many people didn't like Aznar. Many people didn't like Zapatero. Many people didn't like Rajoy. And many people don't like Pedro Sánchez. And I understand that. That's normal in a democratic system. A democratic system is a very messy system. Estoy con la palabra messy últimamente. Messy es desordenado, como una habitación desordenada. Es very messy. Que no es tan tidy, you know, muy ordenado. Democracy is, as Winston Churchill said, a democracy is the least bad political system. All of them are bad. And it's true, because even Socrates, Plato, in his famous book, The Republic, through the mouthpiece of Socrates, he spends 200 pages trying to reach a conclusion about the best type of political system. And in the end, Socrates says that there isn't one. However, in the end, Socrates recommends what he calls a philosopher king. Un rey que a la vez es filósofo, un filósofo que a la vez es rey. And the philosopher king. Of course, in history, as far as I know, there has only been one philosopher king. And that was Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor near the end of the second century AD of the Common Era. He was the last of the five good emperors in Rome. Rome had five good emperors. For a period of about 90 years, the Roman Empire was growing and was very stable. The first one was Nerva. The second was Trajan, Spanish, Trajano. The third was Adriano, also from Bética, from Spain. Hadrian. The fourth was Antoninus Pius. And the fifth was Marco Aurelio. Now, Marcus Aurelius was a Stoic philosopher. And he wrote his Meditations. And they're very, very good. So he was the emperor and at the same time philosopher. So he was, perhaps in the eyes of Socrates, 600 years before, was the ideal, leader. However, Marcus Aurelius made maybe the biggest mistake in the history of Rome. And that was to name his son as the future emperor. He named his son and another person, Doble Dos Emperadores. But naming his son Commodus, you remember from the movie Gladiador, el malo and the bad guy in Gladiator. Of course, the movie Gladiator is very loosely connected to the true history. But Marcus Aurelius decided to name Commodus his. And Commodus is considered, together with, Caligula, as the two worst emperors in the history of Rome. And so the philosopher king, in the eyes of Socrates, made the biggest mistake in the history of the Roman Empire. But that's a topic for another day, not for today, because this is Madrid in inglés. No, it's Roma in inglés. Okay. Ni filosofía en inglés. This is Madrid in English. And we're in the year 1976. Yeah. And I'm still working. I'm working in Intercom. The offices are on Calle Mayor. And I'm very, very, very busy. And I'm living in Princesa Número 8 in a very small, a tiny efficiency apartment or estudio, apartamento estudio, 30 square meters. And I'm making my own dinner, and I'm having lunch near the office, but I'm teaching a lot. I was a very good teacher, and I still am a very good teacher, by the way. The best teacher in Spain, they say, which is not true, probably, but I know how to teach. I know how to make the English language attractive. That's the job of a teacher, is to make the subject attractive. Not necessarily to teach the subject, no. But to make the subject attractive. Si el profe mola, el inglés mola. Si el profe mola, Lope de Vega mola. Si el profe mola, hasta el álgebra mola. Which means, if the teacher is attractive, the subject becomes attractive. So the important thing is the quality, the human quality, really. Not the technical quality necessarily, but the human quality of the teacher. That's the important thing. To change the learning curve. I'm getting philosophical again. Cambiar la curva de aprendizaje. If you want to change the learning curve and make a radical change in the trajectory of the learning curve, it's the teacher's job. Not the textbook, not the electronic blackboard, not the tablet or iPad on every desk. No, no, no. It's the teacher. An outstanding teacher in a cave, in una cueva húmeda, gets 100 times better results than a mediocre teacher with the best equipment, the best textbook, the best electronic blackboards, and everything. So the Ministry of Education should focus on creating outstanding teachers. If you have outstanding teachers, the country will become the strongest in the world. Have you ever had a boring teacher? You have? Okay. But also, I'm sure you remember one or two incredible teachers. Wow, qué pedazo, profesor. De qué planeta sería. You loved it. Habría dado igual la asignatura que enseñasen. Esos profesores. Te habría gustado. De repente, álgebra mola. No, es el profe. De repente, Calderón de la Barca es cool. Es guay. No, no, no. El profe es guay. It's the teacher. It's not the subject. And so it's to make the English language interesting, the teacher has to be attractive. The teacher has to be powerful. And then people fall in love with the subject. Se enamoran del inglés. O de Lope de Vega. No, se enamoran del profe. That's it. That's the secret. That's the secret. And so that was something I realized very early on. I realized that in the Central Nuclear de Zorita. And I realized that also during my 14 months or 15 months working in Intercom Idiomas. I realized that. And so we're coming in the summer of 1976. My parents came to pay me a visit. I took them to Segovia, to Casa Candido, of course, for cochinillo and things. We went to Barcelona. We went to Italy again for a second time. 2 years before, we had gone to Italy in 1974, and now in 1973, 3 years before, and now in 1976, we went to Italy a second time. Now, very interesting. And then my parents continued, and I returned to Spain. And my parents went to Germany and to England. All right. And to France, I believe. And I returned because I had a lot of work. You know, the launching of the Ford Fiesta. But I was living on Princesa Street. And I often went shopping in that area. For dinner, food for dinner and things. I had a tiny kitchen with a tiny refrigerator. But that was enough. And I had a stove with two burners, dos placas en la mueble de cocina, two burners, and a sink, un fregadero, a sink. And I had the bathroom. Very, very small, but I enjoyed it. And I had a fold-out couch. Couch is sofa. Also in English, you can say sofa. But usually people say couch. Por ejemplo, sofa del psiquiatra, we say this, the psychiatrist's couch, never sofa. And a fold-out is desplegable, o sea, lo que es una sofá-cama. We say a fold-out, desplegar, fuera. To fold is plegar o desplegar en este caso, plegar o doblar. And a fold-out couch, and that's how I slept. Yeah. It was very small, but that's okay. I didn't need more. I didn't need more. And in September, I the lady, the young lady who would later become my wife, had a friend by the name of Emiliano, and he was working in Getafe in a company called John Deere Iberica. Now, John Deere is the largest farm equipment company in the world. Farm equipment is maquinaria agrícola. Farm is granja o explotación agrícola. It's a farm. Farm equipment, tractors, harvester combines and balers, basically. Tractores, cosechadoras y empacadoras. This is basically their basic products. And so I was in charge of everything now. By September 1976, I was not the big boss, but I was the el gerente, el hace lo todo. And so I went out to visit John Deere, and I met a man by the name of José María Sancho Artola. Sancho. José María Sancho. One of the most important people in my life. I didn't know at the time I met him. He spoke no English. I mean, cero inglés. Cero. No sabía ni yes. No sabía ni no. He didn't know anything. But that man, he was 57 years old. He was a lieutenant colonel, artillery, semi-retired, which allowed him to work in John Deere. He was head of spare parts. But I'll have to come back and tell this story next week. It's a very important story, maybe the most important in my life. But I'll be back. Have a great week, and I'll see you next Sunday.